We're going to just keep it moving. I just made that decision on behalf of the foundation. That's cool. So he doesn't care at all about the next speaker. The guy whose phone went off, he's just walking around to get his question asked right now. If you are a speaker, I was told to explain this to you, that the big, huge green button in the middle advances the slides, and the red button next to it makes it go backwards. So, also, can we just pause for a second and just admit something racist? I know that my accent makes me sound racist already, but I feel like Dr. Kapil's accent just makes me believe whatever he's saying. Is that just me? I feel like he could tell me anything. Like, you should go play craps, Marty, and bet on the 2 and the 12. And I would be like, I will. So definitely, I don't know if that's just me or not, but there's credibility in his voice, I'm just saying. Jameson Lop is our next speaker. Jameson has been building multi-sig wallets since 2015. In addition to Casa, he also founded Mensa's Bitcoin Special Interest Group. Mensa is that organization for the really smart people. I'm in it. I mean, the Facebook quiz that I took said that if I wanted to be in it, I could be in it. It was like 3 minutes. And after I bought their literature, they said that I could be in it. So I got that going for me. But he actually formed the Mensa's Bitcoin Special Interest Group. So within the subset of people who invest in Bitcoin, there are genius level people that have been accredited by the Mensa organization within that subset of people. And within that subset of people, there are a special interest group of people that Jameson worked with to form this group. Is that an accurate depiction? Was that highfalutin enough? Okay. The Triangle Bitcoin and Business Meetup and several open source Bitcoin projects. He enjoys researching various aspects of the ecosystem and giving presentations about what he has learned the hard way while trying to write robust software that can withstand both adversaries and unsophisticated users, like all of you, obviously, based on this. That's been the theme so far. It's like mobile devices for the people, and y'all cheer. And the Mensa people are like, these people. I'm just playing. And how to protect yourself from a wrench attack. Please welcome Jameson Lop. Am I saying that right? Lop? Lop? Okay. I'm going to wait
all
for
right.
you to get up here.
Come on, high IQ, green button.
Yes.
I've got the lav mic, so I'm good. All right, yeah, so I'm a nerdy engineer guy, but there's a lot of stuff about this ecosystem that's very fascinating outside of just the technology, the humans in particular. And so I have been specializing in security for about 10 years, and while a lot of that does have to do with the technical aspects, at the end of the day, we're all humans, and we're trying to secure these tiny amounts of data, these private keys. And doing that sounds easy on its face, but is ultimately a really massive user experience challenge. And to top it all off of everything else, now we actually have physical criminal elements that are going out and coercing people into basically bypassing all of the technical security measures that they have set up around their keys. So that's why I just want to give a detailed analysis of the wrench attacks that we've been seeing. And if any of you have been paying attention on social media, you may have noticed that they seem to be happening a bit more frequently. So what is a wrench attack? It all goes back to this XKCD from, I think, over 10 years ago. But the point being, I'm a super nerdy guy, and I've got this really fancy encryption that's keeping all of my data protected, and you'll never get access to it. And then, of course, the common criminal just comes along and says, I just beat him with this wrench until he hands over the password and the decryption. And so that kind of goes to show that it's very easy to overthink the level of security that you have and completely miss a fairly obvious flaw that might be sitting right in front of you. And I think this is actually a good example of a lot of people who may have complex and convoluted technical security schemes, but ultimately they themselves and their physical body are a single point of failure, and they haven't really thought about how to deal with that from a technical architecture. So I will say, I don't want to be the FUD guy. I think that it is Important to put this all in context. Wrench attacks are probably the rarest type of attack that happens in this space. We are aware of about 230 so far, though there have definitely been more than that that have not been publicized. But there are many, many greater, more common threats that you should be worried about long before you start worrying about the wrench attack. And unless you're up standing on a stage in front of a lot of people talking about Bitcoin, crypto, security stuff, you're probably not as much of a high-profile target for wrench attacks. But you know, if you're thinking about like what are the higher risk things that I should be worried about, obviously trusted third parties. You should not be leaving your crypto assets on exchanges. You should be taking self-custody. That immediately gets rid of a large swath of issues. Beyond that, of course, getting your keys off of the internet, that protects you from probably like 95% of remote type hacking attacks. And these days, I would say one of the more trendy up-and-coming attacks that people should be more worried about is just social engineering. And that's because over the past 15 years, we have done a great job of improving the best practices, creating new technical, sophisticated security, software, hardware, and other mechanisms that make it harder for a hacker to get in and just wipe you out. So what are the adversaries doing now? They've realized the weakest point for a lot of people in this ecosystem is their brain. This is essentially what social engineering is. It is hacking your brain to convince you to basically bypass all of your authentication and security measures and voluntarily give access to a third party or literally send your money to them. So this is something we're seeing a lot, actually, as a result of various data leaks. You may have heard about like Coinbase has had data leaks recently. A number of other exchanges and service providers are unfortunately required by government regulatory agencies to request and store very sensitive information, your personal information. And of course, information is very difficult to keep from flowing freely. This information ultimately tends to get leaked, passed around, and the criminals then get a hold of that and they use this to create highly targeted spear phishing and social engineering attacks. That's what we're seeing happen a lot today. Now, like I said, we're only aware of a few hundred like media and law enforcement attacks that have been corroborated by legitimate authorities. But there's reason to believe that there have been far more. And there was actually a study by some academics at Cambridge a couple of years ago where what they did is they went out and they grabbed the entire Bitcoin Talk forum data set and basically used AI and other search methods to try to find everyone who ever talked about something that could have been a wrench attack. And they actually found 672 posts that were talking about physical, real-world attacks. That's more than three times as many as we're aware of that have been authenticated by media and law enforcement. So right there off the bat, there's reason to believe that there could very easily be three to four times as many physical attacks happening compared to what we're actually aware of. They interviewed a number of people that that would respond to their messages because they obviously wanted to better understand exactly what had happened in all of these incidents. And this is another interesting stat they came up with is that of the people who did respond to them, only two out of the 11 bothered to report the attack to law enforcement. So, you know, that's another reason to believe that the attacks that we know of may only be in the like 20, 25, 30% range. And there's some logical reasons why people don't go to law enforcement. For one, you're going to start creating public records. You may end up in the media. You may end up getting even more attention, and you may end up getting attacked again. There certainly have been people who have been wrench attacked multiple times. And also, I think in general, especially in the earlier days, this may be less true today, but in the earlier days, a lot of law enforcement would look at this and say, oh, you've got some funny internet nerd money. There's nothing that we can do about this. We don't really care. We're not going to spend much time trying to help you out. And this is also just consistent with a lot of types of online property crime. And for a variety of reasons, online crime can be much more difficult for law enforcement to deal with, especially if the perpetrator is in a completely separate jurisdiction. I can tell you from personal experience that when in the United States, if you're dealing with crimes that are happening across state lines, you're probably out of luck unless you can get federal law enforcement involved. Federal law enforcement, has limited resources, and they're probably not going to get involved unless you're talking millions of dollars in damages or some sort of imminent life and death situation. So, of the attacks that we're aware of, you can actually see some fairly obvious correlations where if you look at the years and the number of attacks, it's roughly correlated with the price, right? So we had the massive spike in 2017, and there was a bit of a lag where then 2018, a bunch of criminals came in and started attacking people. And then we had a few years of a bear market. Everybody get disinterested, including the criminals. Then we have another bull market, same thing happening. And it is noteworthy, if you see 2025 here, we're already well on pace for the highest annual number of wrench attacks. We're definitely going to have more than one wrench attack per week this year. And so by the end of the year, I expect that we'll basically be at an all-time high of wrench attacks. Once again, keeping this all in perspective, compared to all of the other security issues and attacks that happen in this space, this is relatively small. What if we break it down by geography? Well, if you look at the just absolute number of attacks, the United States seems to have the most. There's a lot of caveats here. One, I am generally the one who is keeping track of these things. A lot of people come and contribute to the open source repository where I keep track of them. But there is a number of different biases that are likely inherent in this data. One being that a lot of the alerts that I have set up, of course, are for English language. So if wrench attacks are happening in other languages and they're not getting translated, they may not matriculate around the ecosystem and eventually end up on my radar. There's also possibility that this just has to do with the media and what they're looking for and picking up on, and the fact that Bitcoin crypto adoption in the United States is really high compared to a lot of other places. And this, of course, is only absolute numbers. So I wanted to understand what happens if we look at it per capita. This actually greatly changes the landscape of what it looks like the security risk for wrench attacks will be. Now, this is kind of weird because we're working with a really, really tiny data set, and it may be even difficult for you to see where the red is on this map, but it's Iceland, Estonia, Madagascar, and the United Arab Emirates. Now, those first three are kind of edge case aberrations because there's only been one wrench attack in each of those countries, but they have such tiny population that per capita it puts them at the top. UAE, in particular Dubai, has had 9 wrench attacks, so it's not a one-off. There is a very strong pattern of wrench attacks there with OTC trades for large amounts of cash. So Dubai is actually, from a number of different perspectives, very risky. Only really if you're doing these OTC trades. I will say, to Dubai's credit, it's a very bad place to be a criminal performing these wrench attacks because Dubai has a 100% success rate in catching these criminals very quickly before they can escape the country. So there have been no known wrench attacks in Dubai where the criminals have gotten away with it. What if we start looking at all of the different characteristics of these attacks, though? While the vast majority of them are some sort of violent robbery where a perpetrator has a weapon and is basically coercing the victim into handing over their money, there's a number of different aspects that could go along with that. One interesting thing is that home invasions are quite common, and I suspect this is because of what I mentioned earlier with a lot of personal identifiable information, KYC information. Basically, people's home addresses tend to be very easy to find. So if you have someone who's a known holder of digital assets, You can probably find out where they live, and most people do not have particularly hardened physical security at their house, and that's where we end up with a large number of home invasions. Basically, someone comes, knocks on the door, you open the door, and that's game over for you. Very similar number, though, of kidnappings are happening, which is basically, you know, instead of striking when someone's at home, they are surveilling you, they're figuring out what your movements are, and either enticing you to go somewhere where they can then entrap you and kidnap you, or just grabbing you off of the street. That's, you know, actually happened a few times just in the past month in Paris. In fact, the Parisian authorities believe that there is one single organized crime ring that is perpetrating all of the recent kidnappings and attacks that are happening in France. Now, as I said, OTC trades, that's another very common thing because they're basically going out, and there's websites, of course, where people are advertising their services of doing OTC trades, so they can just ring you up and say, hey, I want to do a trade for a few hundred thousand dollars, and usually they get you to come to a hotel room where there's no surveillance, there's nobody watching, and that's when they tie you up and take whatever you have. A decent number of these also involve torture. This is a particularly nasty aspect of what's happening in this space. You may have heard about just last week, I believe, in New York City. There was a couple of different entrepreneurs in this space who seemed to have had a business dispute with someone that they were involved with, and they enticed him to come and talk about the issue, and they basically tied him to a chair and tortured him for several weeks. And to that man's credit, he never handed over the assets, and he eventually escaped, and those guys are currently in prison. There are some non-violent ones, burglary, theft, sort of snatch-and-grab scenarios. We've seen stuff where people will basically get you to hand your phone to them, and then they'll move whatever assets you have available on the phone. There's also a number of drugging attacks where people use things like scopolamine to make you highly compliant so that you will just do whatever you're told and you don't even need to really be coerced. Now, what are the attackers' return on their investments? This is another thing where there's a really big caveat here because we're already really far down into this tiny number of cases where most of them don't get reported, and even the ones that do get reported, very few of them talk about how much value was taken. So it's entirely plausible that these numbers are an order of magnitude smaller than they really are, simply because we don't have the information. But once again, you can kind of see, you know, somewhat related to bull and bear market cycles. 2017, 2018, we're aware of like $7, $8 million in total that were taken. In 2019, there were attacks, but none of them actually said how much was taken. But really, like 2021 and on, we seem to be off to the races. And we've had, you know, we've had three years with over $30 million accumulated total taken by these physical attacks. And, you know, that was basically averaging millions of dollars per attack. And to get even more specific, there have been several attacks right here in Vegas just last November. There was one attack, was actually a sex worker, and she drugged a guy she was with and took $300,000 from him. And then there was another guy who was a resident of Las Vegas, and he was putting on a crypto event, and several guys followed him home after the event, then kidnapped him, took him out to the desert, said, we're going to kill you and leave you here unless you give us everything, and that he handed $4 million over to them. So point being, you know, we're in this discovery phase where the criminal element, the small number of sociopaths out there who are willing to hurt other people for their own personal gain, they're trying to figure out, you know, should I rob a bank? Should I rob an armored car? Why would I go after a really hard physical target when I can probably get an order of magnitude bigger payday against a really soft target that has basically no physical security? So also, it's kind of interesting that it seems about 10% of these cases, the attackers knew their victims. Like I said, in the New York case, it was like a business dispute. So definitely be wary of who you're hanging out with and who you're sharing information with. You never know what someone's situation might be. You know, maybe they're incredibly in debt and owe people a bunch of money who are going to hurt them if they don't pay them off. It's hard to know what people's incentives are. So, you know, if you're telling somebody about your financial situation, especially in this space where we're talking about digital bearer assets that are highly liquid, you probably shouldn't tell them any details unless it's someone that you literally trust with your life. So what's the success rate of these attacks? Well, it's good for the criminals, it's not so great for us. Because you know, we are sending a signal to these criminals that they're gonna have a high rate of success if they attack us. So amongst the 225, 230 attacks that I've cataloged, 2/3 of them, the attackers are successful. That doesn't mean that they get away with it permanently, but at least the initial attack, they get the money from the victim. What about the justice rate? This is another potentially biased metric because the media doesn't always follow up with whether or not these people, the perpetrators, got attacked. But at least amongst the incidents that I have looked into, 60% of the suspects in these incidents were captured. A lot of them were actually captured and they had failed in their attack. But it's, once again, not very good news for us because I think we're sending a bad signal to the criminals here. Until we start putting up more of a fight and making sure that they are failing in these attacks, I think we're basically incentivizing criminals to harm us. So some not so fun facts. Very low success rate when it comes to self-defense. I see a lot of people on social media being like, oh, I'm good, I have a gun, I would be able to stop anyone who can attack me. And of course, you don't want to have to rely upon defending yourself with a weapon. You have to sleep at night, you don't have eyes in the back of your head. Unless you have like a security team of multiple people that are acting as your bodyguards, you have weaknesses. And the criminals will surveil you and they will wait for a weak moment to attack you. So that's one reason why I think we have such a low success of self-defense. On the bright side, only about 3% of these cases end up in murder. I think the criminals who are committing these crimes do not want a homicide charge hanging over their heads. They just want the payday, they want to get in, they want to get out and move on. And you should be aware that they tend to pose sometimes as law enforcement, sometimes as service workers. This is usually because they want to get you to open the door to your house to do a home invasion. But in some cases, it's actual law enforcement doing this. I don't think in the United States it has been law enforcement, but especially in like Southeast Asia, India, Pakistan area, there have been a number of corrupt cops that have performed these attacks. So what should you do? Well, shut up. Stop flaunting your wealth. A lot of the people who are getting attacked are the like lifestyle luxury influencer types who are basically showing off, walking around with, you know, $1 million watches and stuff. Don't do face-to-face trades. If you really have to do face-to-face trades, do it in a secure environment where there's like public people watching and it's not just like a private parking garage or a hotel room. Obviously, don't talk about your finances. Be aware of the risks of where you are. Know your exits. Situational awareness is important. Don't accept food, drinks, or smokes, or anything that you're ingesting from people you don't trust with your life. That's how you get drugged. And in general, just think about, what does it take for you to move large amounts of your wealth? If it's possible for you to do that very quickly in a few minutes, then you're not doing a good job of being your own bank. You are making yourself open to coercion. And how do you get around that? Well, that would be where I would shill my own company. What we do at Casa is we help people get into distributed multi-sig setups where it's intentionally very difficult to spend those funds. But just realize that, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. So think about your home security. Like I said, 1/4 of these attacks are home invasions. Don't give out your home address if you can get away with it. Obviously, KYC can make that very difficult. Hey, use some of these DEX and swap services that they're talking about that don't require KYC. That's just another reason why you should be interested in that type of functionality. And of course, don't open the door for anyone that you're not expecting. There's a lot of very common physical security advice that's out there of how you make your home less appealing and, you know, a little harder target when it comes to physical security. One of the best things you can do is get a dog. You know, it's man's best friend, but they're also one of the best, nature's best security systems. So, didn't have a ton of time to go into all the details, but I'm the paranoid security guy, so feel free to hit me up or call us up at CASA. We're security consultation experts, and we're happy to talk about all of the digital and physical security issues that those of us in this space are facing. Thank you.